Hello, this is Stuart Wilde. Welcome to a two-tape series on Camelot and its power in the present day. Before I get involved in a discussion on Camelot and the legend of Merlin, the Initiate, Guinevere, Arthur, Lancelot, and the whole story of the Camelot and its legend, I'll first have to go back into history, right to the beginning of the cataclysmic period that we're now in, and talk to you for the first 15 minutes or so about the esoteric history of the world and how I believe there is an energy pattern in an inner dimension that actually assists the destiny of the world to evolve to its highest spiritual point or its highest spiritual possibility. I believe that the world goes through incarnations and reincarnations much the same way as we do. I believe that the planet, that lump of rock that's spinning through space, is a physical manifestation of an inner spiritual power or an inner energy. And that energy has a spiritual evolution. I believe that deep within, in inner dimensions, there is a power that oversees the evolution of mankind. It's not a power that's there to fix the ills of mankind or to stop negativity or to stop war or famine, but it's a power that allows the evolutionary possibilities to go to their highest point. At the beginning of a cataclysmic period, there is always a period of like fallow, a time when very few people are living upon the earth plane, when the tribes are literally just wandering about, more or less in a barbaric state, men living in caves, the tribal ways, and that goes on for a number of thousands of years. Then gradually, there's an influx into the earth plane of like higher selves or energies within a body that are more evolved than the original tribal people. And these energies begin to have a spark of consciousness, a spark of individuality within them. When that happens, the evolution of mankind begins to quicken because like higher spirits are entering into the earth plane, entering into the physical bodies and evolving through the earth plane. And when that happens, I believe that the inner energy that guides the destiny of the earth plane allows an influx of energy to allow man to evolve. That inner guiding energy has sometimes been called the White Brotherhood. However, I don't like that term because it conjures up visions of monks and it has a kind of religious connotation. Metaphysical energy is not religious. It's just pure energy. It expresses and it goes forward in a non-infringing way. The light that people claim to see that have had near-death experiences, the light that I've seen myself on a number of occasions in my life, has been like a non-judgmental, compassionate light. But one of the things that I understood when I've seen it, and I've seen it on about six occasions in my life, approximately, one of the things that I learned about that inner light was that it does not infringe. It doesn't come down into the physical plane to fix the situation. Anyway, let's just trot back in history and look at when there have been infusions of energy. The first one that I'm aware of was in 3300 BC, at the time of the reign of the Yellow Emperor in China. The people began to develop the rudiments of learning. They even had certain forms of writing, which of course was in pictures, but it was a type of communication. They had sophisticated beliefs. They had the rudiments of medicine, and they had shamans or wise men that guided the empire or guided the emperor. And one of the things the shamans used to do is they would take tortoise shells and they would put them on the fire. Then when these shells warmed up, they would drop them in water or drop water on them. And the way that the shells cracked, the shamans used that cracking pattern in the shell to predict the future. It was a way of centering. centering upon something in the same way that a tarot card reader might center upon the cards to bring forward clairvoyant information for the person that they were doing the reading for, or the way that a clairvoyant might center upon a crystal or a crystal ball. And so the cracking of these shells was the way that the shamans brought forward their clairvoyance to guide the people and to teach them. The next major energy influx was in 700 BC. There appeared in northern Italy a group of people. They were known as the Etruscans. Nobody knew, not even to this day, do they know where the Etruscans came from. They just appeared one day. They had teaching, they had pottery, they had art, they had the rudiments of drainage and sauna baths, and they had healing temples that became famous. The Etruscans had within them three initiates, and the initiates were like experts in healing. The Etruscan healing temples I've talked about before in some of my other lectures, but if you'll bear with me, I will briefly explain them again. Basically speaking, how the healing was done was, it was done in the etheric dimension, not in the physical dimension, meaning that the healer would lay down next door to the person that was sick, and the healer, entering into a trance, would move out of his own body and etherically enter the body of the sick person, performing operations or balancing or healing inside that person, and then returning back into his own body. The way that it was done, or the way that that energy pattern could come forward, was because the healer had an incredible command of energy, an incredible command of his own body, and that's how he was able to heal through the perfection of his own physical body and his own knowledge. The Etruscans were neat because they allowed, basically speaking, for the Roman Empire to come about. The Romans, who, after all, were only a few hundred miles south of Tuscany in Italy, they inherited the knowledge of the Etruscans. And it was basically the Etruscans that were the forerunners of the Roman Empire. To understand history, you have to understand what impact the Roman Empire had. Because although the Romans took their power out in the military sense and they conquered, you know, vast territories, what they also did was they bought learning. They bought understanding. Later on, they bought law. They bought order. They bought, again, plumbing and heating, and they bought underground water systems that they used, and baths, and they bought intellectual concepts and writing. And so the Romans did a lot to allow for the development and the evolution of mankind. In 500 BC, there appeared upon the earth a number of masters all at the same time. There was one in South America who has an unpronounceable name, so I will avoid his life story and move straight on to the others. There was Buddha, Lao Tzu, Zoroastra, who was a master that lived in Persia, and Confucius. And the five masters, the four that I've just mentioned, along with the South American one, they allowed an energy pattern to come forward. They allowed the metaphysical base for mankind. They laid out the pattern. Lao Tzu teaching of the way of nature, saying that the God force, or that the divinity, was within, that to be as natural as nature was to be divine. Confucius coming forward with a more intellectual, perhaps what would today would be described as left brain approach, but he taught order. He taught respect for the family, respect for the nation and for the state, and for the rulers, and he brought forward an energy of discipline in that area. Zoroastra in Persia was very interesting because he brought forward a concept of like positive and negative energy. There was like the good thought and the bad thought, and he allowed an energy pattern to go forward that basically there was a link between Zoroastra's mysticism and the teachings of the Nazarene. And in the Bible, when the three wise men come and bring gifts to the boy Jesus, they come from the East. And that symbolized, basically speaking, the heritage, or that is where the teaching came from, is what the writers were saying. the star over Bethlehem that indicated where the Nazarene was again another way of acknowledging that the power had come from the East. I've heard it say, and I have no way of confirming it or denying it, that Zoroaster was in fact the incarnation that Jesus had before he became Jesus. But whether that's correct or not correct, we can only surmise. But we do know that that teaching came through and the heritage came through and it's symbolized in the Bible. Because many Jews had been in Babylon, so many Jews inherited the metaphysical teachings of the Persians. Okay, Buddha taught in India. He taught of the path to the God force was basically by withdrawing from the world, cutting down the desires that one had, and contemplating within. And that was his teaching. And in South America, the teacher there allowed for the great tradition of the Aztecs and the Mayans to come forward many, many hundreds of years later. But at that 500 BC period, basically speaking, the metaphysics of the world came about. Okay. After the Roman Empire fell, there was a period in Europe of the Dark Ages. It was also a period of Dark Ages in China, where there was a dynasty or an era called the Era of the Warring States. And basically, there was a lot of turmoil. In England, around 600 AD, there appeared an initiate, a powerful initiate. He came out of the forest. He came out of the tradition of the Tao, although he didn't call it the Tao. But he taught from this understanding that nature is basically a representation of God. That the most, the easiest perhaps would be the way to say it, the easiest way to perceive the purity of the inner light is to look into nature. This initiate appeared in England and he began to walk around the land. He began to look for people that had a spark of individuality within them. And I'll talk some more about those people in a moment. But what was neat about this initiate, and in the later storybooks, he was given the name Merlin, even though his name was not actually Merlin. He was given the name Merlin. But we will refer to him as Merlin for the ease of this tape. Okay, what was neat about Merlin was that he was like a person that had gone beyond the earth plane, but was still in it. He had the energy of Lao Tzu. He had the energy of the Nazarene. He had the energy of Buddha, of Zoroaster. He had the energy of those masters within him. And he understood power. In a previous incarnation, the initiate Merlin had also been a powerful master. However, at a point within his incarnation, he was given the opportunity of choosing between positivity and the slow way and negativity and the powerful fast way. And Merlin, in the previous incarnation, had chosen the imbalance of the negative way. He had been involved in misuse of power. And whenever you get involved in misuse of power, whether you're an initiate like Merlin or you're here in the 20th century and you are infringing upon other people or you're not allowing them to be what they want to be, what happens is that that power comes back to haunt you. It is as if it creates within you a stain or a mark, or perhaps a way of looking at it would be a blot of, let's say, slow-moving energy that you have to go beyond. And so Merlin, understanding or knowing deep within himself that he had that to go beyond, began to pull and to create energy and to teach, for he knew that he had the ability to change the destiny of the country that he found himself in. He knew also that if he changed the destiny of that country, eventually he would change the destiny or the evolutionary pattern of the rest of Europe and those people that would be destined to come in contact with the countries of Europe. And so Merlin, in an energy of dedication, began to travel England looking for the individuals that basically he could take out of the system that nobody would notice that they were gone. There is a saying, or there is a legend, that says that the people that were in Camelot were like, came from a bastard energy, meaning that they did not have like a mother and father that was in wedlock. And the reason that developed inside the legend, or in the legend that was written down later on, was because Merlin particularly chose people that did not have connections, that could walk away and be a part of what he was doing without causing an imbalance to where they had been. And so that is why that energy of the bastard, or that like the non-married energy of the people in Camelot, came about. Merlin traveled throughout England for a period of about 12 years. And during that time, he taught these individuals that he pulled to him. They numbered just a few hundred. And he began to teach them, but he taught them in a way that he didn't infringe upon them. He changed their attitudes. He changed what they felt about themselves. He changed, or he had them basically pull away from society, from the racial structure, from the pattern of energy that was going on in England at that time, the traditions and the concepts and so on. He had them, he primed them to leave, to literally, in a way, walk away from the physical plane. At the end of the 12 years, Merlin knew that he had to pull this group, or this band of people, together. And so he searched for a place in England that he could put these people, so to speak, or that he could bring these people together. Merlin literally walked up and down the country many, many times. And he would walk, he would teach, he would meet with these people from time to time. And eventually, in what is now southern England, he found a place that he considered he could make his base. It was not a castle. It was not the way that the legend said it was. It was, in fact, a foggy valley. The valley had growing within it an incredible undergrowth of briar bushes. And to get into this valley, you literally had to zigzag in and out of the briar bushes. And Merlin, entering this valley, feeling the kind of isolation of it, the fogginess and the mist that seemed to be there, the briar bushes that you had difficulty walking in amongst them, he began to feel that this valley was a place that he could create his secret society of people, his secret group. In the heart of the valley, up against a cliff, was a waterfall. And behind the waterfall was a cave, or not exactly a cave, but like a slit. A slit in the rock face. And walking through the slit, going deep within the center of the mountain or the rock, was a small cave. It was said to be a crystal cave. And it was there that Merlin began to use his incredible metaphysical power to pull the people to him that he needed. You have to understand that Merlin had a power that had literally not been seen for 1,000 years. He had an ability to go beyond the physical plane, to perceive in the etheric dimension, to perceive within the higher self, and to literally create energy, pure energy, energy that could be felt for thousands of miles, not an energy that he had to take out to the nation and say to people, here is this teaching, here is this philosophy, here is this religion, join me, come and be a part of what I'm doing. No, the energy of the initiate is basically an energy of pulling within and creating power, raw, pure power, but not power that infringes, just power that expresses. And when people came in touch with Merlin and his energy, they were irresistibly attracted to him. Of course, many people were so, like, set in their ways, or their energy was low, or the time was not right for them, or they had a lot of family connections, or tribal connections, or religious connections, and they were not able to up and leave and become a part of what Merlin was teaching. However, as was said earlier, many people he found that just didn't have connections. And eventually, he pulled to him a little over 300 people. The valley was very beautiful, and it had great power. Because of the power of the initiate Merlin, and it was he that allowed it to come about, because without him, it could not have been there. It could not have been a Camelot without Merlin creating the energy. Because basically, in the same way as the dimension of the Etruscans, the inner dimension of the Etruscans, was created by three initiates, the same way the inner dimension of Camelot was created by Merlin. Okay. He pulled to him in this valley these people that were not connected. They came and he gradually began to teach them. He taught them an individuality of self, basically saying, you have this God force within yourself. You're not connected to your mind or your body or your emotions or the tribe that you live in or the traditions of the part of the English countryside that you come from. What you are basically is an eternal, immortal, universal energy inside a body. He taught them basically the Tao. Later on, that teaching, that alignment to nature, gave birth or developed, let's say, from Merlin into what became the Druids. And the Druids, as you probably know, were a sect of mystics that were prevalent in England and Wales and Ireland. And they basically revered nature. And they would have festivals at the solstices and at the equinoxes, and that was their alignment. The Druids, you could almost look upon them as Merlin's version of the Chinese philosophy of the eternal Tao.